And at the very end of his full intro, you can go ahead and translate.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Good evening and welcome to the December 14th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. At this time, we'd like to ask those in attendance to please keep your videos off and audio muted unless you're presenting information or speaking in public comment. We're offering translation services for our Spanish-speaking attendees. To access translation, please click on the globe at the bottom of your screen and then the language. At this time, we'd like to ask if anyone who might need translation would please click on the participants icon at the bottom of your screen and raise your hand.
Buenas noches a todos. Les damos la bienvenida a esta conferencia del Distrito Escolar de San Luis Obispo. Tenemos servicios de intérprete al español y por favor déjenos saber si usted necesita este servicio. Al final de la pantalla puede ver un globo y por favor oprima eso y estaremos dispuestos a ofrecer este servicio. Muchas gracias.
Okay. So the board did meet in closed session. We had three items that we discussed in closed session. The first was anticipated litigation, significant exposure to potential litigation, one case. The second was personnel review and possible action on employment, dismissal, or discipline of a district employee or employees. And the third was public employee performance evaluation, the superintendent's mid-year evaluation. I'd like to go to consensus on the order of business, and I do have a request on the consensus of the order of business, and that is that we move item number, 9.01, which is correspondence, to before the discussion on, item number 6.01, because the written comments that we received relate directly to the redistricting. And so I think it's appropriate that we discuss it at that point. Is everybody good with that? Everybody okay? Okay. Let's go then to item number 9.01, which is correspondence. And the board did receive three letters regarding the item of the redistricting from Lena Egan regarding the California Voter Rights Act. She says, go with Plan B. Michael Berger, support for Plan B. And Janae Dimmick, also support for Plan B. Let's move back to item 6.01. And we do have some other public comment regarding that we will read when we open the public hearing on this, or when we actually get to the place where we want to talk about that. So I think we'll go right now to the demographer, and then we'll read the public comment, and then we'll go to board discussion. Dr. Prater?
Yes, well, thank you. I'd like to introduce Chelsea Olson Murphy, representing Lozano Smith. And she's been with us for the last year as we've ebbed and flowed through this process. And Chelsea, would you mind taking it from here?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Prater. This is a very exciting evening because, as Dr. Prater mentioned, we have spent a long time with this board really going through this process and thinking about it very carefully. Earlier this year, you utilized the 2010 census data to transition from at-large elections to bi-trustee area elections, knowing that the 2020 census data could have, a small impact on that. And so National Demographics Corporation did do a study based on that 2020 data, and they reported back that we need.
Oh, we lost Chelsea. Chelsea, we lost you, if you can hear us.
So while she's trying to find her way back on, what I'd like to pick up from there, if I could. Oh, it looks like she's making her way back in.
I'm not sure what happened or exactly where I cut off.
About midway through, you were talking about the demographers.
Okay, yes. just did on that 20 data and did determine that there were some slight adjustments in the map that needed to be made. And so those maps were presented to the board and to the community in advance of the last board meeting for that consideration. And tonight, the demographers are here again tonight to discuss those proposed maps. And the board will consider adopting a resolution to approve one of the proposed map adjustments.
Okay. Do we want to go ahead and have the demographers come on, and then we'll go to the public comment that we have on this?
Yeah, so Daniel Phillips, please, if you would, bring us through the two options, map A and B, if you would.
Certainly. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay, so let me share my screen with you. And first I want to point you to the interactive review map, where you can go to see each of these proposed plans. So right now, when you load that, you will it will be default. The default display will be the provisional trustee areas. These are the areas that were provisionally adopted earlier in the year based on 2010 census data. So if you uncheck that, you can either check to display plan A or plan B, or if you want, you can display both of them at the same time and you can see the overlap between them and where the two plans differ. And you can see that there's a difference in this area between 5 and 6, and also some areas in the northern part of the city. And if you look to the west here, you'll see that there are no differences between the plans when it comes to the coastal areas. So you'll also see here that the elementary school attendance areas layer is checked, which means you can see in white the boundaries of the attendance area, of all the attendance areas, and you can see which areas would fall under which trustee areas. So if you want to zoom in and see a detailed look of the boundaries, just click the plus arrow or the plus symbol at the top left, and you can zoom in and see that area 3 is extends into the city of San Luis Obispo under both plans, but there is a difference between the two plans. Plan A takes Area 3 to Grand Avenue, while Plan B takes it more into downtown across the freeway. Going to the south, or actually I'll stay up here, so you'll see that there is a little discrepancy in how far the yellow area, Area 6, goes up. So under Plan A, it kind of stops around Terrace Hill. Under Plan B, it goes a little further toward the hospital. And then the big difference is down here by the airport. So you'll see that there is a large area that differs whether it's in Area 5 or 6. So under Plan A, that area is in Area 6. So 6 goes right up to the freeway. Under Plan B, the boundary between the trustee areas shifts to the east so that it follows Highway 227 past the airport and then jogs down to, I believe it follows a creek for a little bit and then goes down to the south. So the Los Ranchos neighborhood remains in Area 6, but a large portion of the attendance area for Los Ranchos School is now covered by Area 5 under Plan B. Now, I just want to briefly show the PDF version of this map. And if I'm switching back and forth between the plans just to highlight the differences there. But we have the demographics for the plans that are provided. And you'll see that the racial ethnic breakdown by trustee area is also provided. But there is not much of a difference between the trustee areas when it comes to the racial ethnic breakdown. What seems to be the main differential between the two plans is the total percent deviation, which is just over 7.5% for plan A and just over 6.5% for plan B. So plan B is about a percentage point closer to the ideal, which would be zero. So that is the basic information I had to present. But I'm happy to take questions or delve into any data deeper.
So while we've got the demographer here, why don't we go to the board first and see if the board has any questions for the demographer, and then we'll go ahead and we'll read the public comments related to this item, and then we'll see if there's consensus for a motion. Does anyone at the board right now have a question for the demographer? Understanding that, of course, we can come back after we read the public comment, although concerned about his time. Okay, I'm not seeing anyone. We do have several comments related to this. Dr. Eisengrath Rogers, do you have them up, or would you like me to read them? Okay, here.
Carmen Dell, writing to express.
This comment is from Carmen Trudell. I'm writing to express my support for Map B, as it is the more a fair option, where districts represent even population distributions, and each district has similar number of representatives. Also from Joyce Zing, dear SLCUSD Board of Supervisors and Dr. Prater, I encourage you to adopt Map B because it would provide more balanced and fair representation. With Map B, each elementary school would have at least two district supervisors represent them, while in Map A, Los Ranchos would have only one supervisor represent their area. Number two, in addition, Map B has a lower population percent deviation compared to Map A, 6.55% versus 7.57%. Thank you for your time and consideration. Annika Clements, I am a parent of a child in the school district, and I am writing about the proposed trustee area maps. I am particularly concerned about the demographic data for trustee area number 7. Both plans A and B have very few participating voters compared to the other trustee areas. Furthermore, in Map 8, trustee area 7 is mainly made up of neighborhoods of college students with few kids in the local schools. While neither map is perfect, I would encourage the board to vote for plan A, which at least gives trustee area 7 more citizens who actually care about the issues in the school district. And lastly, Devin Kuhl Choi. Dear members of the Board of Trustees, I am writing in support of the Map B plan for trustee redistricting. Having reviewed both maps, the Plan B map provides a lower population standard deviation among trustee zones, assigns each trustee area both Title I and non-Title I schools to represent, and ensures that each attendance area will have at least two trustees representing it, allowing for fairer, more equal representation among all schools and students. As such, the Plan B map seems to be the better, more equitable map choice for our district, school district. Thank you for considering the Map B and for all that you do to support our students and school district.
Yeah. Is there anybody from the public who would like to address the board on this issue? Seeing no one, I'll close public comment. I'll bring it back to the board. Is there any board discussion, or would someone like to make a motion? Mark? And then Ellen?
Well, I can make the motion. However, I did want to recognize the correspondence regarding the college students. It is something that does concern me. They are without strong ties in the community, and they're only here for the time that they're in college. It makes me reconsider my original thoughts. However, I can make a motion to adopt Measure B at this time, unless there's other comments.
Okay, so we have a motion to approve Plan B. Would someone like to second that? Seconded by Mrs. Sheffer. Is there further discussion on this item? So we have a motion by Mr. Buckman, a second by Mrs. Sheffer to approve Plan B. Ms. Dobler-Drew? Hold on here, I gotta mark it. Hold on just a second, please.
Mr. Unger, could we clarify that we're doing a motion to approve the resolution with Matt B as the attachment?
Yes. So thank you very much, Chelsea. So the motion is to approve the resolution with plan B as the attachment. Thank you, Chelsea, for clarifying that for us. Okay. Ms. Dobler-Drew? Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer? Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Frame? Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. The motion carries 7-0. Thank you very much. Thank you, Dr. Phillips, for all your work. Thank you, Chelsea, for all your work. We appreciate it. And we'll be moving forward from here. Thank you.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Good night. Okay. Let's see. Next, we have our student representatives to the board. And we have a couple of subs tonight. So Gavin McDermott from San Luis Obispo High School, are you here?
Yes. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, thank you. Great to see you.
Well, yeah, it's great to be here. My name is Gavin McDermott. I'm the treasurer in sub for Noah Clausen, the president. I have a presentation, go through some of the updates around campus. Is screen sharing enabled, or? Would you like me to go through the points?
Say that again, Gavin. Do you need access? Are you doing a presentation? I think
I got it. Yeah, I think I just got access.
You're all set. Okay, cool. Thank you.
Perfect. Yeah. Let's see here. Alrighty. You guys see this?
Yes.
Perfect. Alrighty. Yeah. So like I said earlier, here in substitution for Noah Clausen. I'm just going to be going through some of the points. Last Friday, we had our blood drive. It was an awesome event. We had 42 people apply and filled up all of the spots. And Vitalant helped put us on. It was a great event, and we're certainly going to do one again this year. This Friday, we have an open mic, which is a chance for students to come and present, perform, such as like music or stand-up comedy. We're also going to be selling burritos. It's going to be an awesome one. In athletics news, right? Boys cross country are the state champions for Division II. Incredibly impressive. Really well done by them. Girls soccer finished second in Buchanan tournaments, and boys had finished third. That's about all for athletics. Band. They performed in the Christmas parade. There's a photo of them right there. And improv auditions are going to be held this week for the improv team. And I believe band is going to be doing a Christmas concert as well. There we go. Some other events. This Wednesday is our first local business spirit day. We haven't done it before. And students are going to dress in apparel to support local businesses. It's going to be a really cool activity. I don't think we've never done something like this before, but I think we should have a fair amount of turnout. Seniors are in the lead in the Class of the Year competition, and so they will receive a prize for beating the other classes in spear points. And some progress on the track that's being produced right now is that it's going relatively smoothly. Yeah. Do you guys have any questions?
Yeah. Any questions for Gavin? Gosh, Gavin, well, thank you very much. We really appreciate it. You're right. I drove by the track and field this afternoon, and it's looking really good. The bleachers are looking good. The work is really coming along. So it's going to be great for the school when it gets finished.
100%. Yeah. Thank you guys for having me.
Well, thank you very much. Let's go to Leah St. Arnaud at Morro Bay High School. Leah?
Yeah, hi. I'm Leah St. Arnaud. I'm my school's ASB vice president, and I'm filling in for our president, Nick, today. So some highlights. This week, ASB is hosting a winter week. And so yesterday, Monday, was Warm and Cozy Monday, and we had students wear pajamas and bring a mug for hot cocoa at lunch. And then we have Ugly Sweater Day today, so we all wore our best ugly sweaters. And then tomorrow, we're having a fuzzy sock hop, so there's going to be music, and kids are going to come into the gym and dance, so that's going to be really fun. And then on Thursday, we have a bundle up day, so you just wear, like, winter clothes. And then we have a winter wonderland for a bunch of students to just come meet up and play some winter themed activities and games in the quad. And then as for athletics, our winter sports are going strong. Boys basketball hosted the HIT tournament this past weekend. Our wrestlers placed 9th out of 39 teams at a tournament in Bakersfield, with Wesley Wilson as the tournament's most outstanding wrestler. Both boys and girls soccer are off to really great seasons. And of course, as a lot of you may know, our football team has made a historic trip to the state championship game for Division 7. A lot of memories have been made this season. I'm on the school's cheer team, so I've been witnessing it pretty firsthand. And we lost last weekend to Fall River High School, so we placed second, but that's the furthest that we've ever made, so that's pretty good. And then our mock trial team had a very successful scrimmage against Templeton High School the Saturday before last, and they're excited for this year's mock trial season. And then our winter music concert is tomorrow at 6 p.m. It's going to be shorter than our usual winter concerts, but it's going to showcase what the jazz band, the concert band, and the choir have been putting on this year. And yeah, we're excited for winter break, and our finals are going to be next week on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And that's all I have, unless you have any questions.
Great. Questions for Leah. Yes, Ellen.
Will the winter concert be via Zoom, or is it live?
I believe it's live and going to be hosted in our big gym tomorrow.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to say, as a parent of a Morro Bay High School graduate, and I know we have several parents from Morro Bay here, just how excited we were about your football team's great accomplishments. Not only, you know, I think it's important not only for the football team, but also for the Estero Bay community. And I think that the football team and the school really came together over this. I know I saw videos of the bus leaving the campus with the police escort. You know, we were talking to friends, and it's like only in Morro Bay could this happen. And it was very exciting. I know that you guys fought hard, and it was a tough loss, but we really appreciate it, and I know the community really appreciates it. So if you could just pass that word on behalf of the board, I think we'd appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you so much. It's been really nice for, I think, the school community as well, and like coming off of the huge break we all had from COVID, I think it's been nice to have really fun football games and a really long football season. So,
yeah, exactly. I mean, from a team that really had a hard time winning to a team that came in second in the whole state of California. That's pretty exciting. So
yeah, thank you. It's super crazy. Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions? Evelyn.
I just wanted to comment and thank the
the football team and the entire community, school community, for coming together and really giving, bestowing upon the community a gift, because it was really a gift of engagement, enthusiasm, pride. And it was really kind of marvelous to watch parents in the community come together, the comments that, you know, I heard from all around. So I'd really like to extend, as I know all of the board members would like to extend, congratulations to our student athletes who worked really hard, our coaches, for the gift they've given the community, because it was truly a gift to us. So thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. I'll make sure to pass all the kind messages on. It's very, very nice.
Great. Well, thank you.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, thanks again. We really appreciate it. And good luck with your finals. Okay. Let's move to item 7.02, which is the Pacific Beach Program highlights. And Mr. Mayfield, I see you're here to talk.
Yes, good evening. So as you mentioned, Pacific Beach is doing program highlights, and teacher Deanie Greenilch will present those for us tonight. Deanie.
Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. And I have a student here with me. I don't know if you want to, if she should put her video on. She's going to share a little bit too.
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely.
So that's Lexi. So I don't know if.
We'll work on that.
Okay. I'll start a little bit while we're waiting for her to come
on. I think we got her on right now. I think we're cool. Thanks.
Great. Thank you so much for having us. We're really excited to be here and share a little bit about our school. This is only my second year at Pacific Beach, and I am so thankful to be there. It's just an amazing program with amazing students and amazing staff, and there's a lot of great things going on in there. I've had the pleasure of being able to help with Student Senate, so I've had a really great time talking with our students and finding out what matters to them, what's important to them, what they love about our school. And through that process, they shared some concerns and some ideas, which I'm going to let Lexi talk a little bit about. And I'm going to let her kind of share, because we have a video that kind of shows the culmination of a lot of our conversations. And so, Lexi, I'm going to let you share a little bit about that.
Hi, I'm Lexi Moreno. I'm a student senate leader at Pacific Beach. So we decided to do this promotional video to show the different ways that we do things compared to the comprehensive high schools, and how we don't really fit into the stereotype that we've been put in for years. I've noticed in my 2 years at being at Pacific Beach that there's a really bad view on PB, and it's often talked down upon. And it gets quite the judgment. But once you see a glimpse of what our school is like, you can obviously tell that none of us fit into the stereotype that a lot of adults and kids put into our school. And yes, unfortunately, it is a lot of adults. We're a family here. And with this video, we're encouraging the community to think about PB as an alternative high school instead of a school for quote unquote bad kids. I encourage teachers to use Pack Beach as an alternative option instead of being used as a threat, which many of us students at PB have been told when we were learning at the comprehensive high schools. So I'm grateful to be a part of this high school and being able to put this video together for you guys. Our staff and students do an amazing job at encouraging us to meet all of our goals. And of course, our main goal is to graduate at PB. I'd like to give a huge thank you to Mr. Chris Dollar and all the staff for making PB a place where we feel like someone. So thank you for your time, and I hope that you enjoyed the video.
So I'll go ahead and try to play the video, and then Lexi and I will stay on, and we're happy to answer any questions that anyone has. So I think you're seeing the video, right? Mm-hmm. It's not playing, but can you see it mm-hmm. on the screen?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, we're not hearing the video, Deanie.
Not hearing the audio.
Oh.
Try, yeah. Hold on.
Okay. Let me see. Let me try something.
We can play it from our end, too. Hold on.
Okay. Let me try one more thing. Okay. I think that should fix it.
Deanie, we can also try to play it on our end if need be.
Okay. I think that may have fixed it. Interrupt if it didn't.
It's rolling whenever you're ready.
That works.
Like that. Say,
like, I love it at PB. Just some kind of a statement.
I love it at PB.
I'm Roni. I go to PB. It's one of my favorite schools I've been to. You know, all the teachers here, they push you to, you know, go at your own pace and, you know, strive for what you want to be.
My name is Stacey Nairn, and I teach mostly English at PB, and I've worked in alt ed my entire teaching career, and I'd have to say that Pacific Beach is one of the most unique schools in our area, if not ever, in the history of schools.
I am so thankful for Pacific Beach as a teacher. I've only been here a couple of years, and it is such a great place to be for lots of different reasons. One reason is we're really small, so we're kind of like a family. And I feel like people really accept each other for who they are. And you don't have to pretend to be something you're not.
I very much appreciate PB because as a student, I've transferred between multiple schools. And this is by far the best. The curriculum here is very individually based. And the teachers are most definitely here for your benefit.
Here at Pacific Beach, we offer different varieties of learning for different students. Obviously, people learn at their own pace, and our teachers encourage us to do so. But we also have one goal, and that's to graduate.
Pues sí, me ayudan aquí. Aprendí de muchas cosas este año, de la escuela que estaba antes, y de respetan las maestras.
At PB, our school is very unique in the way that most of our work is done in class during school hours. And we do not take home most of our work. It is an option that you can move forward with our IW, which is independent work at home, but it is never required. And our IW programs are very extensive. There are numerous different courses that you can be taking, and each course has an X amount of credits attached to the lessons completed, which allows you to graduate early, to make up for credits, or to just move forward as an individual trying to graduate on time. Personally, I've taken advantage of our IW programs, and I am set to be graduating a year early.
I've taken advantage of the IW classes. I'm set to be graduating 6 months early.
Another amazing thing about our school is the schedules. Our AM schedule is going to be from 8:40 to 11:40, and our PM schedule is from 12:20 to 3:20, which allows for students to either sleep in, go to work, or be able to use their time wisely and be active in our community.
Oftentimes, Pacific Beach High School has been stereotyped. The students that go here are stereotyped, and it has never been that stereotype. So what I mean by that is Pacific Beach High School isn't a school for bad kids. It's not an easier way of doing school. It's an alternative pathway.
Okay. Es tienes más como te ayudan más. Puedes aprender más y te dan como te ayudan para registrarte en colegios y te dan oportunidades.
And I think that's one of the things that is special about Pacific Beach High School is it provides options for students. And one of the things that we take great pride in is giving students a different pathway for discovering what they're good at, what they're interested in. And students who have never felt good enough or they feel like the school that they've attended has never been provided them with the enough options, we can provide them with the options to complete high school, successfully, and also to learn about what they want to do after high school. And that's something that's really important to us.
I'm really thankful for PB because they're super flexible and you can graduate on time and it doesn't take too many hours out of your day. And I can spend that time with my son.
You guys never close doors on me. There's always, always another way. Nothing's ever too late. Always an option to keep going and not to, like, give up on any of my assignments or give up on any of my grades.
And PB has been really helpful for me because it's been able to help me catch up on credits after COVID, and it's been a super welcoming environment.
School is tough academically due to COVID, and it was just extremely tough having to do it online, which without the help you can get, and Pacific Beach was just the way to see it through.
I like PB because when I first came here, I was a new student, and it was really welcoming. Everybody became my friends right away, and it's a good environment.
One thing that I really like about PB is that the teachers actually really care about you graduating, and they actually talk to you, and they provide this class called Portfolio that helps you with college.
I feel like it's a fit environment for anybody, because I didn't necessarily have problems at my other school. Mm-hmm. But I just like a smaller environment with like a more one-on-one learning style is more helpful.
Aquí en Pacific Beach hay una maestra que le puede ayudar a los estudiantes que hablan español.
One of the things I appreciate about PB is the fact that all of our teachers and all of our students work together to kind of help each other out. If somebody doesn't have a way to get somewhere or we need help with our work, somebody else will help each other out with it. And for that, the whole school is kind of helpful. It's its own care net.
Has benefited me in more ways than I could have ever been benefited. I got supported in so many ways that I actually want to graduate now, and I have a full career planned out for myself.
It's really flexible with hours, too. You can, like, go to school in the morning and still work full-time in the afternoon. It's, like, very supportive teachers. Good school.
I think the culture of PB is very family-oriented. It's very cool and relaxed. We all have a lot of fun. We all have a laugh, but if things need to get serious, they can, and it's in a very calm and positive, reinforcing way.
PB is great.
That's awesome. Thank you. Wow. Are there any board members who have comments? I can't imagine that the board would be silent at this point. Mark?
Yeah, I love to visit PB, and this just confirms a reason why. The staff and students are great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Other board, Dr. Eisenrath Rogers.
I just want to say that was a brilliant video because I could really see inside their souls and what they're interested in doing and how much they appreciate what you do with them. So thank you.
Thank you. So many students wanted to be a part of that. They really have such a loyalty and love for our program. And I think they often feel misunderstood. And so this was kind of something that they wanted to put out there and want to make it clear that I know a couple of the comments maybe could be viewed as negative towards the comprehensive high school. And that is not our intent at all. We just want people to recognize that we still have a strong, rigorous academic program, but we also, you know, a lot of the things we're able to do because we're small. And so we know teachers at every school in this district care about their students. So I wanted to make that clear. It's just, you know, being smaller, we're able to do some things that larger programs, it's just a lot more challenging to do.
Steve, and then Ellen.
Yes, as others were alluding to, these students really break the mold and they are so unique and they have a creative and positive contribution to the world. I mean, they are very soulful, as Mrs. Eisenrath Rogers was saying.
Ms. Grunelsch, I just wanted to say that your comments with regard to Pacific Beach being misunderstood at times, I understand, and I will say that I think I speak for at least my fellow board members, who are fully capable of speaking for themselves, that we see it as part of our of what we do to make sure that the community understands the nature of Pacific Beach High School, what it has to offer, and its purpose, and the students it serves. So we do all we can to dispel any illusions that the public may have about the wonderful place that it is. Thank you.
Marilyn?
Thank you. I think I have to speak, otherwise they'll think I'm asleep over here because every other board member has said something. Speaking for myself, as a person who at one point did attend continuation high school, and for our former board member, Walter Millar, whose son attended PB and who was a strong advocate, we are, as a board, always very supportive of PB. We understand that it's an alternative program that works for a portion of our students who need a different experience to be successful. So I thank you for your work, and PB never asks us for anything. They're just kind of quiet and they go about their business, but if there's a way that the board can be helpful to you, please let us know.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And I guess I would just end by saying, I think all of us, all of the board members have at one time or another been to Pacific Beach's graduation. I know we've all visited the school. And it's a different kind of graduation. It's a graduation where each student is introduced individually. Each student's story is told. Each student's bright future is revealed. And we know that it's a special place. We know that some of the students have to work, and that some of the students were not successful at the comprehensive high schools, but they've been more than successful at Pacific Beach. We know that you guys focus on career readiness and academic rigor. But we also know that you do special things like teach kids how to sew, right? You have a farm. I mean, these are wonderful, wonderful things that you're doing for students. And I think, as the board has said, we value all of our high schools, and we just really want to congratulate you guys on the hard work that you've done. And thank you. And thanks to Lexi, too. I see she's not on here anymore, but if you could give her our thanks. Okay, Lexi, thank you very much. We really appreciate it. And if you could share with the staff and the students how much we appreciate them, I know the board would like that very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. We really appreciate the, we know as a board that you support us and you back us, and we really, really appreciate that. And we're hoping to get the word out into the high schools and about, you know, what we're about also. So we can help promote ourselves. And thank you, because I know you're out there helping us also. So appreciate it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mrs. Frame has a comment.
Yeah, Dini. I just wanted to thank you again. What this reminds me of is really this video is really a collection of stories, and it's a collection of heart and souls. And really, the students, as they present themselves, are really presenting the face of, you know, our future of different ways of doing things. And really, that's kind of how we move forward. So I appreciate, and please let the students know, we appreciate their front and centeredness and their honesty of telling it like it is. So thanks a lot, Dini. Bye.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Okay, let's move on to item 8.01. This is our annual board reorganization. The first item of business is to elect a president and clerk for 2022. Anybody want to make a motion on that? Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Mr. Unger, I wonder how you would feel about serving as another year as the president of our little tribe here.
I would accept if the board, somebody wants to second it, and if that's something the board would like to see.
If that leaves the door open for me to make a motion?
Sure.
I would like to move that Mr. Unger serve another year, at least, as the president of the Board of Trustees.
Thank you. Would someone like to second that? I'll take Eve, she had her hands up. Thank you very much. Is there any further discussion? Well, thank you. I will accept on behalf of the board, and thank you for your confidence in me, but I just want you all to know that we are a team, and I'll do my best to continue to help us move forward in the business that we know that we have to look forward to this coming year. Well, we got to vote. I just want to thank everybody first. It's discussion. We do a motion and say a little discussion, you know. But thank you very much. So let's see. Hold on here. I have to write this down. I'm sorry. Yeah, I am. Thank you. Okay. Catherine?
Aye.
Eve? Evelyn? Marilyn? Yes. Ellen? Mark, you're welcome. Yes. And I'm a yes. The motion carries 7-0, and thank you very much. We now need to open nominations for clerk of the board for next year. And I would like to take a little privilege here, if the board would be willing to allow me to do that. And I would like to nominate Ellen Schuffer as clerk for next year.
I would like to second that.
Okay, so we have a motion by me and a second by Catherine. Is there further discussion on that? Yeah, great question. Thank you, Eve.
It is okay with me, but I would like to give Dr. Eisendrath Rogers the deep respect for the work she's done. And thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any further discussion? Okay. So, Mark?
Yes.
Eve? Catherine? Marilyn? Evelyn? I'm a yes. Ellen? Motion carries 7-0. We will dispense with, thank you very much. Shall we go ahead and do the reorganization right now? Or we can just switch. Why don't we just do this?
And Mr. Unger, would it be okay if I shared a thought or two about Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Absolutely. Yes, and then I want to say a few words. Dr. Prater?
Mr. Unger, thank you for giving me an opportunity to share a few words about Dr. Eisendrath Rogers, who has been a part of our, as you said, our little village, our tribe, our group, since I've been here and long before that. So I just, you know, can't say enough. And I put some thoughts down in the event something like this might happen. I wasn't sure. So I put some thoughts down, and I just think it's important to speak to this publicly. So you know how I feel about you and how I think many of us do. So it has been a distinct privilege working with Dr. Eisendrath Rogers over the past year while she served as clerk to the board. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers has served as a trustee for the San Luis Coastal School District since 2007. She is the ultimate student advocate and isn't afraid to lean into challenges. I admire and appreciate her ongoing advocacy for the San Luis Coastal Education Foundation that serves as a hub of innovation for our district. In fact, Dr. Eisendrath Rogers was the one in my ear 10 years ago saying, we really need a foundation. We really, really would benefit from one. And why don't we get started? And it just so happened through the through the challenges of the Diablo Canyon power plant closing, we were able to manifest that crisis into an opportunity. And I credit you, Catherine, for being the inspiration behind that. Let's not forget Dr. Eisendrath Rogers' support for Measure D, creating 21st century high school facilities directly benefiting future generations in San Luis Coastal. She was an essential, an essential contributor to the board's vision, mission, and guiding principles process and corresponding final document. We are proud of these efforts and accomplishments. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers is a parent to two successful young men who are products of our school district. Max recently graduated from Reed College in Oregon, has his own business, and Sam from Harvard University and is now writing scripts in Hollywood, I suppose. As a parting gift and in recognition of Dr. Eisendrath Rogers' distinguished service as clerk to our board during the past year, two books of her choosing will be placed in the libraries throughout our district. Thank you.
Thank you. I must go say something that I forgot to do, though I forgot to go to public comment on this item. So, Mrs. Dawson, is there any public comment? No public comment. And Catherine, I just want to tell you how much fun it's been serving with you. You know, when Dr. Prater said 2007, I can't believe it. Can't believe it.
Makes us look old.
Okay. No, don't say that. You know, I've got to tell you, you know, Catherine ran against me in 2004 and I did win. And then she came back. She persevered. And she came back, and I think you were appointed to the board, weren't you, in 2007? And it's been so much fun and so great serving with you. I think Dr. Prater said it all. I'm not going to rehash what he said, but thanks for everything you've done. Thanks for your
service. It's my pleasure. It's always been my pleasure. And, you know, I just have to say I'm just like a gum on a shoe. I'm not going anywhere, so don't get the impression that I'm leaving the board. I will still be here. Okay. And it's been, and it's every day is a joy to be with each of you. Thank you.
Yay, Catherine. Okay. We have item 8.03, which is adopt the 2022 board meeting calendar. Dr. Prater?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. Each year in December, we adopt the board meeting calendar for the following school year. So think calendar year 2022. And Mrs. Dawson, if you could open up that calendar so I could refer to it, because I'd like to go through it with you, if you don't mind. So hold on one second. So while Mrs. Dawson's pulling that up, I just want to acknowledge as we go through this, it guides us. When we adopt this calendar, it allows us to then begin our planning for the subsequent year, and so this informs our discussions and communications with teachers as well as parent community. So it's important that we get this part right, and I just want to go through each month really quickly if I might. Normally, as you know, we have two board meetings a month in normal months, the first and the third Tuesdays. But it isn't always that simple because of a variety of issues. So for example, if I could, in the month of January 2022, we have our board meeting, just one board meeting, and that's January 18th, because we do not start after winter break until January 10th. And so that gives us a week to prepare to get our board meeting posted. When we return, the yellow portion there on the calendar represents the board study session. So we have the week we come back, we have a board study session on January 13th and an evening board meeting on January 18th. Then you go to February, and the months of February and March, they look identical. Meetings on the 1st and 15th. Of each month, as well as Thursday the 10th, of each month of February, March for study sessions. And those study sessions are typically dedicated to Measure D to make sure we stay on target and stay focused. And then we move into April, and that is this year, April, the second week of April is our spring break. So we have one meeting in April on April 5th. And then you move to May, and you can see that we have three board meetings in the month of May. That is a long month, but it's also an important month because it's the end of the year and we can really do justice to our LCAP and open up those important discussions, as well as a board study session on Thursday, May 12th. When you move to June, you'll see the light blue on June 6th, and that is our board annual board retreat where you set direction for the following year based on the LCAP priorities, based on your priorities, our vision, mission, and guiding principles. So that's typically a full day. I call it a retreat, but it's really a workshop because we hold it here and don't go to any place fancy. But we get a lot of important work done on that day, which then leads you to the study session, because the week of June 6th is graduation week for our high schools, Pacific Beach High School, San Luis Obispo High School, and Morro Bay High School. We then go to our study session on June 16th and the single evening board meeting on June 21st. And that's typically where we close out loose ends and finish out the year. Then we move into July, and July is our down month. And you'll see the yellow, the sort of the darker yellow on the 14th of July. That is a board study session. You might ask, well, what are those bright yellow boxes in July? And that's when we catch our breath and do 4 days, 10-hour days in the summer in July, which allows our district team to catch their breath a bit. Then we go to August. We have one board meeting, evening board meeting in August, August 16th, and a board study session on the 11th. First day of school is August 18th. We then, and just so you know, in August, the first 2 weeks of August are typically very heavy professional development of administrative teams. This is when we really get a lot of our organizational work done with our team. That's when our principals typically return, the first week of August. We then go to September, and we have the 6th and the 20th, as well as the 15th for our study session. And then in October, we have the 4th and the 18th with a study session on the 13th. And I would like to note here publicly that on October 4th, that is the High Holy Day of Yom Kippur. And I would request that that meeting be an early meeting so that those that observe that holiday can still participate in the holiday as well as in the meeting. November 1st and 15th are the two board meetings in the evening, as well as the scheduled study session on the 10th with Thanksgiving break the week of the 20th. Then we go into December. The end of November and the 1st and 2nd of December, that is the annual conference for CSBA, that's your board's professional development opportunity, and that will be in San Diego again this year. And then we have the board meeting in December on the 13th, and I'd like to remind the board that the reason it's held in December on the 13th has to do with the election regulations and laws that you cannot swear in the new trustees or the trustees that won the election until the votes had been completed. And that is the second Friday of December. So that's why we have it on the 13th, as well as the study session that same week on the 15th, which then leads us primarily into winter break the following week, the following 2 weeks. So those are the calendar of board meetings that I'd ask you to consider for approval tonight for 2022.
Okay, I'd like to go to the public to see if there's anyone from the public that would like to address the board on this item. Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board for their discussion. Mrs. Sheffer.
I just want to confirm that other than Yom Kippur, there are no other major problems with the calendar as set forth.
It's my understanding that we looked at all the major religious holidays when designing this. Perfect. And I believe Mrs. Dawson has confirmed that we're clear of those other.
And I appreciate you doing that. I know it's a challenging job. I've had to do that for events before. Yeah. And I appreciate that you took that into consideration.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay. Other comments from board members? Seeing none, is there anybody that would like to make a motion? Mr. Buckman? So, Mark?
I'll move acceptance of the calendar as presented.
Do we have a second? Second by Dr. Eisenrath Rogers. Is there any further comments from the board? Seeing none, Mr. Buckman? Dr. Eisenrath Rogers, Mrs. Sheffer, Mrs. Roger, Mrs. Frame, Ms. Dobler-Drew, and I'm a yes. Motion carries 7-0. Item 8.04, appoint board members to committees and liaison posts.
Yes, for those in the public that don't know, this is the hardest working school board I've ever known. Not only do you participate in three board meetings a month, most districts are two. And in addition to that, we have developed these subcommittees. And these subcommittees are again, more responsibility and more rolling up your sleeve action that you participate in throughout the year. And so within these particular subcommittees, we have current participation. And then each year at this meeting, we decide, do you want to continue in your existing roles or do you want to make it known that you'd be interested in something new? And so currently we have this the Equity Team Committee. And that's presently Mr. Buckman and Mrs. Frame. There is a third board representative that we would like to fill on this. So on that, I leave it open to the board for discussion.
Okay. Ms. Dobler-Drew, are you interested in being on that committee?
Yes, I am. And I've considered it and had a brief correspondence with Dr. Prater about it and said I was interested.
Okay. Is there anybody who has an objection to that? Mr. Buckman?
No objection at all. I have to admit, I want to continue on this committee, but I have some time situations that I need to work out. So if there's I hate to do this. If there's another member that is dying to be on this committee, otherwise I'd like to continue. Both my kids come from a diverse background. But I have to admit that there's going to be times I'm going to miss these meetings as of now.
Is there anyone else that would like to take up the challenge for that one? Okay. And if it becomes too much, Mark, let us know and we'll bring it back to the board and see if anybody else wants to be appointed to that. Yeah. Dr. Prater, you want to continue?
Yes. So I assume Mrs. Frame would still be willing to be on that committee? Okay. Thank you. And so the next committee is the Central California Schools Financing Authority. And this, for those that do not know, is a joint powers authority. It is the fastest meeting in the world, I think. but it involves a former agreement going back, I want to say, 25 years or more. And it's a brilliant agreement, and it has to do with the oil revenues that are between our district and Lucia Marr School District, and the shared distance between between those oil fields and the revenue and some of our students. And the agreement is that we would get 40% of the oil revenue or the tax revenue. Lucy Amar will get 60%, but they would benefit from the students that are in that particular area as part of their local control, their revenue for students. So it's a nice deal. And we currently have Mrs. Frame on that committee. I leave that to the board for discussion.
Mrs. Framer, is there anybody else that's interested in taking up the heavy burden of the California School Financing Authority?
I just want to let everybody know that Mr. Millar, I discussed with him at great length the requirements of this position, and he assured me that I would not be overburdened, and I thanked him very much for his advice. And it's a brilliant agreement. It really is a brilliant agreement, and it really helps both students in both districts. So, yes, I would continue. And thank Ms. Millar for his consultation.
So the third...
It's become very, very difficult under Zoom, especially.
You have to be fast. The third committee is the SLO, San Luis Obispo County School Boards Association subcommittee. And it presently, Mrs. Sheffer is presently serving on that particular group. And it is a representative body across the county to make sure that our voices are heard when it comes to things that impact school districts and boards.
Thank you. As many of you know, I work with the San Luis Obispo County Office of Education that overlaps some of these responsibilities, but not all. And I'd like to suggest that Mr. Unger take this off my plate. I know he's busy, but I actually forget that I'm on it most years until I receive something in the mail about a meeting. But I would just prefer to continue my separate work with the County Office of Education and be able to call upon colleagues as needed to assist me with that work.
I'll take it on, but I want to find out if anybody else has an interest in doing that. Mm.
It's close in the time commitment to Mrs. Frame's commitment.
Ah, okay. Thank you. So
very onerous.
Okay. I'll take it on. Thank
okay.
you.
Andy, you got that? Okay. And the next subcommittee, we're fortunate in our district to have interest-based bargaining with our classified union groups, CSEA and SEIU. And that is a really important subcommittee as we begin to work with those particular groups. And we currently have Mr. Buckman representing CSEA and Mrs. Roger representing SEIU. I leave it for board discussion.
So, Mr. Buckman, are you interested in continuing on that, given what you were just talking about, your time constraints?
Yeah, so it was a time conflict, so my time constraints are good. I, as a former CSEA employee in their headquarters, and as a former CSEA employee in school districts, I would be honored to continue in this position.
Mrs. Roger.
Well, I have been the board representative to SEIU for a number of years, and I would be happy to continue doing it unless someone else has a particular interest. And if they do, it is valuable work, and I would be happy to turn it over to someone else if they would like to try.
No, I just have a comment, yeah. And I know in the past, Marilyn and Mark, I'm sure, will recall that I made some noise occasionally about the same people serving on these committees for many years, and I just want to say that this particular year, after the rough couple of years the district has experienced through COVID and it's not over, that I really appreciate. I am going to speak for stability on these committees. I think it's really important. The two of you have forged relationships that are meaningful and will be particularly helpful, I believe, this year. So that's my comment.
That's exactly how I feel. I think the relationships that you both have been able to develop and maintain over the years, and the trust that we have in you and that I think the employee associations have in you is going to be just key this year. And so I would absolutely encourage that. And I hope I'd like to see you continue to do that. Okay. Good.
Okay. And our next subcommittee is the Tri-County Education Coalition. It's an organization that basically is composed of representatives from the Central Coast counties of San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Ventura. And it identifies common education concerns and interests among the groups and organizations that are impacted, that impact public education in the Tri-County area. We currently have Mr. Buckman. I have been fortunate enough to go and observe some of these meetings that in the past had been held pre-COVID, had been held in Santa Barbara County. And I leave it for the board for discussion.
You want to continue, Mark?
I unless somebody else is, wants to do this, I would like to continue. I was among the group that formed this organization. And if I can, to Eric's point, this group's made up of parents, teachers, classified, administrators, and anyone else. And, oh, I'm sorry, and superintendents. And it actually became the model for a state committee up in Sacramento. So I think it's very powerful, and I would honored to stay on it unless somebody else wants.
Does anybody else have an interest in that? Hey, Mark, I think you're it.
And the next subcommittee is the board policy subcommittee. Now, I want to say this. Prior to this subcommittee, board policies were, we didn't really have a good system to really stay on top of board policies, especially as they just began to stack up. And we use Gamut. We use recommendations from CSBA, and laws are constantly evolving and changing, which then impact policies. So this subcommittee has been invaluable to for us to stay current and relevant in our policy development. So with that said, this particular subcommittee works really hard, and they partner with Mrs. Frost to review critical policies and bring them back to you for first and second readings before approval. And I think it's a great system. And we currently have Mr. Buckman and Mrs. Sheffer, and they've done a fantastic job. And I just want to just state that.
Well, I think I'd like to see, I think Ellen and Mark should continue.
if Mrs. Frost and Val Harrigan can continue to put up with our inability to track which policies we're particularly reviewing at each at which meeting, as well as our oftentimes last minute schedule changes, then I'm willing to continue.
Mark?
And I as well. This committee is kind of near and dear to my heart. And if you guys had taken away everything else, I would have asked to stay on this one. It's just been great work. And I'm so glad to see the logjam going. And I would love working with Diane and Val. Ellen, I don't know, but but it's important work. And I would like to continue. Thank you.
I just want to let the public know how important this committee is. Board policies are one of the chief responsibilities of the board, and they're what guides the management of the district. When Dr. Prater talks about Gamut, it's a service that we subscribe to that provides model board policies for us. However, those model board policies are not always in concert with what we believe here in San Luis Coastal. And so it's really important that we have those board policies vetted. in a way that actually supports what we want to see happen here. It is very detailed work, but it's extremely important work. And if we don't stay up with our board policies, it could put the district in the jeopardy in harm's way. And so the efforts that they've been putting on, and our assistant superintendent, Val Harrigan, our administrative assistant, are really important for this district and this board. So there's nobody else that wants to do it. I would say you guys go for it.
And Mr. Unger, so our next committee.
Sorry, and if I could just mention, if you were going to go for it, there's a meeting this week and have to prepare for it.
So. And our next subcommittee is just as important, and that is the San Luis Coastal Education Foundation representative. And as you can probably gather, Dr. Eisenreth Rogers has been on this committee since the formation of the foundation. She continues to be a voice of on that foundation board, a voice for kids, a voice for our board, and it's critical. That role is critical, and I see it actually becoming more critical as we work through this one-time money that the state and the federal government have bestowed upon us, and we're most grateful for that, but it's one-time money. So we're needing to be sophisticated in our approach with the foundation to make sure that when we transition through those dollars, that we have a plan, and the foundation is core to that. And it requires a lot of nuance and a lot of conversations, and Dr. Eisenreth Rogers has been phenomenal. So I leave it to the board for discussion.
Dr. Eisenreth Rogers.
I would be delighted to continue serving on the Education Foundation. It's very exciting, and Christina's amazing, our leader in this area. But we have a fantastic group of people that are working around this throughout the entire district. So yeah, it's very exciting times, and we've got our wing beneath our wings right now, and we're just really taking off just now.
And I'm sorry.
Okay. And Dr. Pryor.
And then the final.
Everybody, we're good with. Okay, good. Thank you.
And then the final committee is is one that we started just a year ago, and that is the District Facilities and Surplus Property Subcommittee. And this one is presently serving by Mrs. Sheffer and Mrs. Roger. And we've met several times to discuss surplus properties, to discuss the vision for what that could look like, so that we could then bring it back to the whole board for discussion. It's been a bit slowed. It's been for a variety of reasons. We've had, some discussions that I think need some more contemplation before bringing it back to the board. It's a critical group and a critical conversation, especially again, as you look down the road towards Diablo Canyon closure, and the potential need to reimagine how to utilize those properties. So with that said, I leave it to the board for discussion.
I would like to recommend that you two continue. I know, Marilyn, your experience in construction and your knowledge in that area, I think, has been valuable. And Mrs. Sheffer, you're willing to do it. Nobody else wants to. Marilyn, are you willing to continue with that?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
All right.
So I think we've had board discussion. Let's go to the public to see if anybody from the public would like to address the board. Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board for a motion. Would someone like to make a motion to, I'm just going to read what it would be, to appoint members to the committees and the liaison posts. And so the equity team would be Mr. Buckman, Mrs. Frame, and Ms. Dobler-Drew, the California School Financing Authority, Mrs. Frame, the SLO County School Board Association would be me. Interest-based bargaining liaisons would be Mr. Buckman for CSEA and Mrs. Roger for SEIU. Tri-County Education Coalition would be Mr. Buckman. Board Policy Subcommittee would be Mr. Buckman and Mrs. Sheffer. And the San Luis Coastal Education Foundation, Dr. Eisenreth Rogers. And the District Facilities and Surplus Properties Subcommittee would continue with Mrs. Sheffer and Mrs. Roger. So would someone like to make a motion to that effect? Yeah, I'll make a motion that we accept the appointments to the committees and liaison posts as discussed. And second by Mrs. Sheffer, is there any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board. Let's see. Dr. Eisendrath Rogers.
Yes.
Ms. Dobler Drew.
Yes.
Mrs. Roger. Mrs. Frame. Mr. Buckman. Mrs. Sheffer. And I'm a yes. Motion carries 7-0. 8.05, this is nomination to the Delegate Assembly, Region 9C. Dr. Prater.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. This particular action item is CSBA, California School Boards Association, includes this governance group, includes a statewide delegation of representatives who are trustees on school boards belonging to CSBA, which is us. And in our region, 9C, we have two delegates with staggered terms. And our Mr. Buckman is one of those members. He was reelected in 2019. As all of you know, he is active in CSBA and very engaged. And he has expressed interest in continuing and is seeking nomination for this particular role again. It's due January 7th. So tonight would be our night to make that nomination and take that action.
Okay. I'd like to go to the public to see if there's any public comment on this. Okay. Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board for a motion. And I would like to go ahead and move approval of item 8.05 to nominate Mr. Buckman for the Delegate Assembly for CSBA Region 9C. Who seconded that? Mrs. Frame, seconded by Mrs. Frame. Mrs. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just there. Sorry. Mr. Buckman? Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer? Mrs. Roger? Mrs. Frame, and I'm a yes. Motion carries 7-0. Let's move on to public comment. We already, let's see, we have heard from some people. However, I'm going to read this statement before we get into public comment. At this point in the agenda, the board welcomes comments on matters of district interest. The board will listen but cannot engage in discussion or take action on items not listed on the agenda. Generally, this section of the agenda is for individuals or a representative of a group to address the board on issues not listed on the agenda. Speakers who wish to discuss items on the agenda are requested to wait until the item comes before the board. However, comments may be given on an agenda item at this time if it's not possible for a speaker to stay until the agenda item is heard by the board. If you submit written comments on a topic, you will not be allowed to also speak on that topic. Comments or correspondence submitted anonymously will not be accepted. If you'd like to speak in person, please complete a yellow public comment request form and submit it to Mrs. Dawson. In-person public comments will be heard first. If you wish to speak via Zoom, click on the participants icon at the bottom of your screen and select raise your hand. When your name is called, you may restart your video if you wish and unmute your audio. If you need assistance with your video, please let us know and we'll attempt to fix it. If you have a problem with your audio, please click on the thumbs down icon and we'll attempt to assist you. Written public comments submitted prior to the board meeting will be read by Mrs. Sheffer following the verbal public comments. All public comments will be limited to 3 minutes, a limit of approximately 450 words in written comment. You may not cede any remaining time to another person. Any portion of your comment extending past the 450-word limit may not be read aloud due to time restrictions. All written comments that are not read into the record will be made part of the meeting minutes, provided that such comments are received prior to the end of the meeting. Please be aware that written public comments, including your name, may become public information. Again, there will be no ceding of time. I will go, first of all, we had some public comment related to Item 6.01, I'm not seeing that we had any other written public comment. So let's go to the public here. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address the board? Okay, seeing none, I'll go to our online public comments. Is there anyone, Mrs. Dawson, from the public who is online that would like to address the board at this time? Okay, seeing none, I'll close public comment. Let's move to item 10.01, business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, just so tonight we have the first interim budget on the board agenda to hopefully approve. And I just wanted to a quick shout out to Katie Eklund, who's here tonight in the audience. It's her birthday tonight as she'll be presenting. And so a lot of work and effort goes into the first interim. And I don't think there's ever been a time since I've been in my position where I feel like we've kept she has done a great job, like with LCAP and just tracking the budgets and sharing that information with Ed Services and with the staff. So we really know where we're at throughout. So, you know, with all the COVID funding and all the regulations and having to, you know, track all of that, and you have to turn in budget reports to show exactly how every penny spent. And I mean, she's been doing all of that behind the scenes. And so again, huge kudos to her for getting that work done. The band is able to play, fortunately, because we got all the safety gear in for COVID, right? So just so the board knows, those items finally came in. And I found that out because I talked to Mr. Bellier at one of the Poro Bay High football games, and he was sharing, you know, so excited about the kids being able to play indoors again and safely, right, with the COVID screening and face mask protectors, all those types of things. So very excited for the kids to be able to have these concerts again. And my daughter, who's 12, a sixth grader, I think that the highlight of the game was listening to the band. I mean, they were absolutely fantastic. It was unbelievable. So it was great to be there. Lastly, for the board to know, before COVID hit, we had done really 6 months work and re-looking at our safety plans and coming up with health and well-being plans and looking at the pillars of safety from Safe and Sound School, done all that work, and meeting with principals monthly, I should say, to go over it and finding deliverables with Resolute, doing all of that. And then COVID hit and it all kind of just came to a screeching halt because priority changed. And so that said, priorities are getting back to normal now. And so I just want the board to know, we'll be kicking that off again. So we'll be bringing up the pillars again. We'll be calling back in Resolute so we can finish those plans. And really the next phase is to come up with that kind of training. So kind of a 5-year training plan and communicating that information with our students, staff, and parents, as well as with the board. So I will be bringing you safety updates that will include those information items, and look forward to sharing that with the board as we move forward.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any question? Are there any questions for Mr. Pinkerton? Item 10.02, Educational Services Update, Mrs. Frost.
Thank you. Just a couple of updates for you this evening. I just want to remind the board that on December 1st, our elementary sites had a minimum day. And during that minimum day, our ISLA team, so Rick Mayfield, Laura Storm, our MTSS TOSAs, and then all the MTSS teachers on our sites worked with all elementary teachers analyzing data. We have our small group win time, what I need in the classroom. We're identifying kids who need additional support. So our elementary teachers spent that afternoon looking at the data, kind of celebrating successes, but also planning next steps. So a really valuable use of time for our elementary teachers. Little update on iInnovate. You know that this is our education foundation, also supported by this board. We've got our innovation labs, our TOSAs. Katie and Sarah spend a lot of time with Jeff and with Christine Robertson from the board, really trying to make sure that these labs are used by our students and that our teachers understand the value of the labs and how those lessons can really change lives. Our TOSAs have started co-teaching with some of our teachers across the district and have actually partnered with 60 teachers throughout the district to co-teach in those labs, kind of modeling what that looks like. And we hope that that just expands their use and that our kids can really, really value from that investment. And then finally, a shout out to Student Support Services. As busy as they are, they've put on two amazing trainings over the last couple of weeks. You remember that this board approved SEB monitors, right? Social Emotional Behavior Monitors, to partner with our elementary counselors. We trained, Student Support Services trained those classified staff so that they can be effective on the campuses, working with the students, working with the teachers, and working with the counselors. And then they also, Student Support Services, provided training to our SDC teachers. So that same day that our elementary teachers were analyzing data, our SDC teachers were working with a consultant in the area of behavior. So really, really important work across the district.
Okay. Thank you very much. Any questions for Mrs. Frost? Okay. 10.03 Measure D update, Mr. Pickerton.
So you just really quick, it finally rained. We have a lot of new buildings, and there's a few issues that we found, you know, that it actually rained and rained hard enough to be able to tell, right? So we're working with the contractors, you know, that all of, just so you know, the reason why I bring it up is our buildings and our construction are warrantied. So when there's issues or problems that come up, the contractor's on the hook to come and fix those and go through. So as the storm has rolled through, we found a few issues here and there. And so Mr. Bonin, working with the construction firms, having them come back in, fix any issues or problems, and to ensure the long term, you know, we have a long life of these school buildings, right? But we have had a few power issues over the night, in particular at San Luis Obispo High School. No fault of the school or construction of those types of things, but there's some service issues outside over by Scolari's. You might have seen them or saw them working on one of the big power lines there. So they must have had something going on that side. So I think most of those, for the most part, are fixed. Again, kudos to our BG&T team who you know, talked to PG&E, called in, find out, you know, this morning, you know, unleashed everyone out to sites where there was any issues, power not working, heater not working, those types of things, to get everything back and running. It's a little rainstorm at times. We forget what it's like to have a little bit of a weather pattern come through. So, and hopefully it continues, to be quite honest with you. Hopefully we get a lot of rain. So thank you.
Thank you. And I think you're showing your age. I believe it's now Spartan final. let's go to 11.01 public hearing. Intention to appoint a personnel commissioner. I believe that's Mr. Block.
All right, good evening. I'm here this evening for a public hearing, the intent to appoint a personnel commissioner. The San Luis Coastal Unified School District Personnel Commission is a three-member body with one member of the commission appointed by the Board of Education. Julie Jones is the appointee of the Board of Education, and she has indicated that she intends to retire this year. Her term will expire on December 1st, 2021. The school board intends to appoint Irene Iwan to fill this vacancy. Ms. Iwan, who's out on the Zoom call at this time, has had a long career in public education, beginning as a school nurse in Arizona. She served San Luis Coastal as a school counselor and assistant principal at San Luis High School, and Lucia Marr as an elementary school principal. Since her retirement in 2008, she's been an active volunteer for clubs and schools in Lucia Marr, as well as a member of the Board of Community Counseling Center. Additionally, she has been a volunteer at the Polls for Elections, Woods Humane Society, Alpha, and the American Association of University Women. As a registered voter residing in the attendance area of San Luis Coastal, she is eligible to serve as personnel commissioner. The public hearing is an opportunity for the public, staff, and other interested parties to express their views on this appointment of Ms. Iwan to the Personnel Commission for the term beginning December 15th, 2021, and ending December 1st, 2024. Following the public hearing, the board may take action to appoint a new personnel commissioner.
Okay. Mr. Block, did you say that Mrs. Iwan was available on the Zoom call?
She is.
Would she like to address the board at this point?
Sure. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity. I've been doing other things other than things in education, and I'm kind of excited to get back to San Luis Coastal after all these years and to be involved in education again. So I'm really looking forward to this opportunity, and thank you for having me.
Great, thank you. I'm going to open this public hearing now on item 12.02. I'm sorry, item 11.01, a public hearing with the intention to appoint a personnel commissioner. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'll close the public hearing. Thank you very much. Thank you, and we'll be taking a vote a little bit later in the meeting. Thank you for volunteering to do this job. It's a terribly important job.
Thank you.
Move on to item 12.01, resolution 11-21-22, first interim report as of 10-31-21. Mr. Pinkerton?
Is the board supposed to approve this now, the position?
I'm showing this as a resolution right now?
No, I'm talking about the personnel commissioner.
No. I believe we vote on it later.
Okay, just double checking. Sorry about that.
Yeah, that's okay. So, Mr. Pinkerton.
Actually, we're going to have Katie Eklund, Director of Fiscal Services, is going to kick this off tonight, and then I will follow up with the 10-year budget.
But before we do, we understand it's a special night for you.
She's very excited that I shared that news with you.
Right.
So,
you know, I just wanted you to know. Can we like just embarrass the heck out of her? Are you guys ready?
I think it's too late for that.
One, two, three. Happy birthday to you.
I apologize, Katie.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Katie. Happy birthday to you.
Katie loves the attention and speaking in public, and so this is perfect for her to get started off the first interim. Katie, go ahead.
So, Katie, you have some good news for us.
I'm trying. Ryan, can you do the presentation? I can't get it up.
I'll have Mandy share it.
Thank you.
The presentation.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking. I have to open it.
Oh, wait, now I lost the Zoom.
You got it?
No, I don't. Oh, there we go.
You can go to the next page. Go to the first page. Can you see, Katie? You good?
Yep, got it.
Hey, go ahead.
All right. So, oh my gosh, threw me for a loop there. So as you can see, we're comparing budget adoption to the first interim here. At budget adoption, we are estimating what we believe our beginning and ending balances will be. It's our estimated actuals. And first interim reflects our beginning balance as of unaudited actuals. So that's the balance we actually closed the year with. So we had estimated 18 million and we closed the year with 24 million. Part of that was we had $2 million extra hit the fund balance, plus we received some COVID funds late in the year. And so those went as part of our fund balance for the end of the fiscal year, which you will see we are starting to spend in this year, which makes it look like we have a $4.9 million deficit. Our revenues have gone slightly up. We'll go through what those revenues are. We have our estimated expenditures increasing. Like I mentioned, we have a 4.9 deficit, but I'll walk you through what that is. And even after all of that, we will have a estimated $1 million increase to the ending fund balance. But again, that will be confirmed at year end close when we go through that process. Right now, the first interim, it assumes that we spend every dollar in our budget. And as we know, that isn't always true. So we'll each interim and estimated actuals and then audited actuals, we get a clearer picture of where we're going to end the current fiscal year. Slide number three, please. Thank you. So our revenues for state and federal, we've made adjustments for the COVID funding. What was also added was special education COVID funding. We received alternative dispute resolution funding for about $105,000 and learning recovery funds. And that was around $400,000 estimated so far from the SELPA. We have 2 years to spend those funds, and I believe that there is a plan in place that we have submitted to the SELPA. We report on quarterly, and we'll track how we are going to spend those funds over the next 2 years. Property taxes. Property taxes were reduced by $1.1 million. Currently, our secured and unsecured are still showing growth, but unitary was reduced by 15%. So that is where our $1.1 million reduction in property tax comes from. And that's reflected in our 10-year and our multi-year projections for the out years. Special education property taxes that we get from the COE, that was adjusted. Any other allocations to the titles and carryover, we'll see that that was also adjusted. And that contributes to our deficit spending as well, which I'll talk about in a few minutes. Local revenue, we always are adjusting for the current billings, any local grants we get, transportation fees. Those aren't always known at budget development, so we make changes to those revenues as well. We are still about $14 million over the current LCFF funding, so very much holding on to that basic aid status. And when we get to the expenditure slide, I'll talk a little bit about the COVID carryovers and any other carryover dollars that we have. Next slide, please. Here's a breakdown of what our revenues look like. Property taxes is 77%. We have other LCFF. That would be our Educational Protection Plan Act, the funds that are in there. It has our adult ed transfer to our Fund 11. We have three charters that we pass property tax through. That is in our other LCFF. And our special education portion of taxes that we get in regards to AB 602, that is in our other LCFF and local taxes. We have 3% for federal, 5% for state income. We pull out the STIRS on behalf. That represents 4% of our total revenue. And local, which, again, is billings, any transportation fees, any local grants, that makes up 7%. Next slide, please, Mandy. Here's a breakdown of our expenditures. We have certificated salaries, classified, administration, and employee benefits making up roughly 85%. And that is also 85% of our expenses out of our total budget. And that is of our projected revenue. So if you look at our revenue, which is around, I think, $87 million, 85% of that is spent. Employee benefits are at 20%, but again, the STIRS on behalf is broken out, which estimates about $4.4 million. We have books and supplies at 5%, operating and service expenses at 13%, capital outlay, which would represent any buses, any vehicles, anything over our $5,000 threshold for purchasing would be a capital expense, and that's 1%. And other transfer and outgoing expenditures are at 1%. Next slide, please. So here is a recap of all of our benefits. I want to look at the health insurance for a minute, because that's the one big one right now to me that stands out on the slide. It's showing a negative 5.61%, I think is what that says. We have hired 111 employees since budget development. most of those employees are being funded by COVID dollars. It's our MTSS teachers. It's our AIT teachers. Instructional aid support, and all of those employees that were hired that are qualify for benefits are going to be included in our benefits run, or the new plan starts in October. So as of second interim, I would expect that negative 5.6 to come up more towards the 2% and be on target with all the other years. It's just right now, it looked like it was a lot lower as of the budget development number. So I just kind of wanted to point that out, that at second interim, you should see that swing the other way as we calculate in what all of those new employees, if they're taking benefits, and what the changes to benefits would be. And then jumping back up to the top, STRS and PERS continues to increase. PERS right now looks like it will have the biggest increase going into next year, but hopefully there'll be some good news in January in regards to that, and maybe there'll be some buy down of the retirement percentages, and what we, and maybe that'll be closer to maybe 23% increase. And PERS is, or STRS is also steadily growing. And hopefully, again, that will see some buy down and be reduced. Next slide, please. Here is a comparison slide for our LCFF versus property taxes. Currently, right now, you'll see our ADA for 21-22. If we were a LCFF district, we'd be funded at $7,275, and that is being funded off of prior year ADA. We are down in enrollment, which reflects our ADA is down. So when the calculation is done for LCFF, you get whichever higher is the current or the prior year. And so if we were a district, we would be LCFF district, we would be funded on the prior year. Even with that, we are still at property taxes per ADA at $11,000 per student versus $9,700 if we were a LCFF district. They are, the COLA was projected at 2.48 for 22-23, and they are saying that that could be have a big bump based on the governor's budget and the way revenues are coming in. So we'll know more for second interim and see how the COLAs play out into the future years. But again, we're about $14 million higher than what we'd be funded if we were LCFF. And so that is, I believe, the last slide. Are there any questions or anything I could go over in the documents that you guys were handed out? Okay, Mark?
Mark, why don't we go to the public first?
Oh, I think that's a great idea. Public,
and then we'll go to, is there anybody from the public that would like to address us on this item? Seeing no one, Mr. Buckman.
Katie, thank you very much. Thanks for giving up your special day and joining us. So some things jumped out at me, and we've talked today, so I'd just like to go over those again if I can. On page, let's see. So there was about $1 million difference in what was projected and what we actually have received. Mm-hmm. And I'm a little concerned about how that works. Is that something that just carries over now, or does it affect the projections that we saw, let's say, last year, the 10-year projection? So, yeah.
Okay, so for property taxes, what we do is we get our estimate from the county. And so to back up a little bit, at budget development, we were given the P2 numbers, and that's what we projected our budget off of. At P1, they came in $1 million lower. So what I do from there is I take that new estimate and I take that and I project off of that. So the projections in the out years are based on the reduced rate of the property taxes. And so if at P2 they come in higher, we might choose to bump up a little higher, or we might stay conservative and keep the lower number and continue. We never do go as high as what the county assessor's office and treasurer's say. They're still saying 4%, and we only look at our secured and our unsecured being projected at 3%. So we're still kind of conservative compared to where they are. And so I think that played well for us that we only saw $1 million drop because it was all again unitary, but our secured and unsecured, we didn't have to change.
Okay.
And so if I can tie it up to that same thing too for Katie in terms of we have new board members. So just for you to understand. So budget adoption happens in May. So we haven't closed the books yet. We haven't finished our revenues. We haven't finished our expenditures. We don't realize our unaudited actuals, which is the reality of what we took in and expended until September, really, after the end of the summer. So as a basic aid school district, we have to project our budget, take a guess, right, our best guess at the time in May of what we think that projection is going to be. And we use kind of historical factors where it's at. I believe 2 years ago, it was closer to 3%. Last year was 4.1%. Realizing, of course, through this, that the unitary tax was going to drop as expected. That's why we have SB 1090, those funds coming to us.
Mr. Pinkerton, before you go on,
yeah.
Could you please just for the public's understanding what the unitary tax is and what the relevance of unitary tax is to our revenues?
Yeah, so in San Luis Coastal, because the PG&E power plant, Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant, is within our attendance area, we actually receive some of the unitary tax. So it's a tax on utilities. And so a large portion of that goes to our school district, which is why the closure of the Diablo Canyon affects San Luis Coastal so much. Those unitary taxes, the amount that they pay, has slowly been going down. But it really depends on how much they devalue the plant. So we don't know that. They don't give us any indication of what that's going to be. So, you know, 2 years ago, it was a lot. And then last year, it wasn't as bad. And then this year, pretty good hit. Now, the positive thing of this, I will tell you, is that, you know, a long time ago, and you remember when we were talking about Diablo Canyon shutting down, the thought was that we were going to be looking at zero to negative revenue increases in the future. But because real estate values have gone up, secured, unsecured values, they've actually made up for the loss in unitary tax. So though we're not seeing the 4% increase this year, we're still seeing an increase in revenues with a substantial unitary drop. At some point in the next 4 or 5 years, unitary tax will drop to where Diablo Canyon shuts down, and that will be the end of our worry about the unitary tax drop after that, right? So we just kind of have to weather that storm as we go through and until we get to that point where, you know, the unitary tax is set. There will always be some unitary tax in our area. There will always be, you know, a few million type of thing. But, you know, I think when I started here, it was like 12, 13 million. It's dropped down to, I believe it's like 7 million now, where it's currently at. So I expect that to drop, but with real estate values, property values, going up, you know, they've helped us in terms of not seeing the dramatic declines, that we potentially anticipated. So I just wanted to, that's why there's some, sometimes there's some, good.
Mark, can I just
ask, yeah, go for it?
There is a proposal to build the largest battery storage for electricity in the United States in Morro Bay, as well as wind turbine electrical generation off the coast, mm-hmm. which will run through, I believe it's projected to run through Morro Bay. How would that affect our unitary taxes, possibly without knowing whether any of these things will happen? So will that increase our unitary tax?
Yeah, so the battery storage facility, I think for sure, is a positive for us if that comes through and it does move forward in terms of unitary tax. I'm unsure about the offshore at this point, whether is that federal property, is that part of our district, how that would work long term. I'm not positive yet. I think the battery plant is probably, you know, as we've read and as we know, it's much more viable situation that will happen soon. We'll see what happens with the wind. You know, I think that right now it's probably, you know, they're looking into it, talking about it, but I think that, you know, they actually have a plan for the battery storage facility, something that I think will happen, you know, hopefully soon to assist us. So I'm not positive on that yet in terms of, again, the offshore aspect, how that would work.
If the battery storage plant is constructed, won't we get, hopefully, property tax based on the buildings and the stuff that's inside of it, the batteries inside of it? Plus, and this is a question I have. My understanding of part of the unitary tax was that the power that was generated through the transmission lines was part of that unitary tax. Is that true? Am I misunderstanding that?
I'm going to have, you know, Dr. Prater actually attended a meeting where he met with the representatives from the battery storage facility in the city, and probably can elaborate on that more.
If that's the case, then as the electricity would flow out of there, would we not receive some unitary tax based on that? Or is that old thinking?
Yeah, I did ask that question, and the answer I got was probably not.
Okay.
But we would expect to receive upwards of $750,000 to $1 million a year from the battery storage facility when it's fully developed. Of course, that doesn't include all the other developments that would go along with that, the promenade area and the commitments that Morro Bay is putting in place around that potential battery storage area. So there could be some really great advantages, but my understanding was we would not receive unitary tax based on that storage facility, but the wind farm off the coast would likely land in the Morro Bay area, because that's where PG&E has their entry point, and that facility would likely generate unitary tax for us. Mm-hmm. But not the battery storage plant.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Sorry, Mr. Buckner.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. So on page 5, first of all, I want to thank Katie. She took my call right before lunch, and I hope she got something to eat. So on page 5, there's some listings, and one of them is called PEEP or PEEP stars. And my understanding from our discussion, and you'll just correct me, is that it's a limited enrollment program, that it and that people wait in line and then have to pay to join the program. Mm-hmm. Do I have that sort of correct, or how far off am I?
It's our inclusive preschool program, where it's with special ed and the gen ed students, and that we charge a fee to. It's one classroom that we charge a fee to. And if there are families that need tuition assistance, there is paperwork they could fill out for that. And Ryan, could you elaborate any more on that?
Actually, we'll have Diane Frost elaborate on it.
Yeah, it is in our special education program. It's a 50-50 preschool. It's fully included. So half of our students are students with IEPs, and half of our students are students who are general education without IEPs. So a fully included day. And we do, as Katie said, we do have a process where we can charge parents. It's a minimal charge, not very expensive, but we can charge parents. But for those who meet income qualifications, they get the time for free.
Okay, so this was my understanding. I could have this wrong again. My understanding was it was $300 a month per student. Is that what the district kicks in, or is that what something a parent might have to pay to participate?
I believe that's the parent fee.
Okay. So then I'm hoping that there's some kind of assurance that anybody that wants to get in can get in. So is there set enrollment?
I'm not sure what you mean by set enrollment, but we have not limited the class by income. But
oh,
we
yeah.
Also
right
don't
now, I'm just
bar talking, the class.
Yeah, interest. Right now I'm talking about population of the class.
Okay.
So let's say you plan for 10, but 100 people want to get in.
Mm-hmm.
How do we deal with the over people, you know, the extra people?
Mm-hmm. We try to go first come, first served. Like I said, it's not like our state run preschools. It is in the special education program, so I believe it's first come, first serve. I also know that we have staff members' children who have access to that class as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So roughly what's the enrollment in the class?
You know what? I'd have to look up the enrollment to tell you the truth.
Sure.
I don't know what it's at. I don't believe
Sorry.
We've made, no, it's okay. I'm happy to look it up.
Yeah.
I don't believe we've made it to the 20 children, and I'm not sure that we've had 10 general education children yet.
Okay.
But I also, just a reminder that that there is no charge for special education students to attend that program.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So it comes down for me is, I don't remember anything anywhere where we or other school districts, let me just speak for I've never run across a program in a school district that you had to pay to be in the program. Sometimes we band instruments or something like that, but to actually be in the program, I'm a little confused by that.
Yeah, it's a preschool program. And I know that when we were looking at this, we did look throughout the state. And there are other preschool programs similar to this, where you're talking an inclusion program with special education children, where other districts do charge, like we charge here, a nominal fee. But I can do a little bit of research for you and give you some information on it.
Yeah.
And again, I do think it's important to note one more time that if a family meets a certain income level, they are not charged that nominal fee. And we don't have any bias towards a fee payer over somebody who would get in for free.
And then just lastly on this one, how do families know about this program? How's it advertised?
So I know that we send out flyers. Like I said, I know that we have teachers' children in there. So we'll do flyers on the campuses where we have the program. And right now, our program is on the C.L. Smith campus. In our special education program, you all are aware of Child Find, right? So we have a process where our preschool program sends out flyers to pediatricians, to area preschools, or to area daycares, that kind of thing. So we try to get the word out that way.
Okay. So I'm very excited about what's coming up this summer and hoping it'll go forever, which is the summer program that's going to be finally open to everybody. So I was kind of concerned about this being one of the few summer programs, but I think we're going to move on. On page four, Katie, there's something called TF of apportionment. It's down just a little bit below the PEEP.
Mm-hmm. Oh, for $584,000?
Yeah, yes. Can you explain what TF is?
Yes, that's the local property taxes we get from the County Office of Education for our AB 602 special education funding. And they transfer that to us. And so there was an adjustment because the state increased the allocation per ADA on our base funding for AB 602. So I increased the budget accordingly in the local
room. Okay. And then just lastly, it maybe not tonight, but sometime I'd be interested. So we keep talking about the COVID dollars and how they've sort of buttressed the budget or actually pushed it way up. And I'm kind of interested for this year, what's the per student, including COVID, but also what's the per student if we didn't have the COVID numbers? So I don't know if you can do that tonight, but sometime.
The per student without the COVID, or the per student is without COVID dollars is the $11,000 versus the $9,000 on the LCFF per ADA. Unless you wanted to include all of the other local funding and special education funding and all of those other ones, then that would be a different calculation. But if we were an LCFF district, we'd get 9,000. So that doesn't include COVID dollars. If we were to take our COVID dollars, then we would want to take our total budget and divide that by our enrollment.
And we talked about it, and I apologize to hit you on the kind of cold on tonight, but and then the last thing is, in one of these documents it talked about declining enrollment, that the district has declining enrollment. Can you talk to that, or at some point can we get a summary or a sheet about our enrollment?
Yeah, and I can share it, Katie. So, and again, at the beginning of the year, we've shared some of that information. It might be time to share it again in terms of updating you type of thing. That's with fine. It, but we did see a decline during COVID years. I mean, I think the board, hopefully the board knows yeah. that, right? That we had kids leave, go to private schools, you know, some charters, different things. We have gained a lot of those students back, but still overall a decline. I will be sharing a demographic enrollment projection report that was just completed. I'll share that with the board too, which will give you some of that information long term. What I would tell you from the enrollment report is really we have pretty what they're anticipating just stable student population in San Luis Coastal, despite the amount of homes that are being built in our area right now, that they still see that as being, you know, kind of where we're at currently. So it was kind of interesting. Some of the information that I read in the report, again, I'm getting a little ahead of myself, but it was kind of the Los Osos area. Even the coastal, they actually maintained some of their kindergarten enrollment better than the schools in the city, despite the fact that most of the housing development is here in the city of San Luis Obispo. So it was just interesting to see, but I will share that.
Okay. Thanks, Katie. Thanks. Thanks, Ryan.
I believe Evelyn had her hand up.
So I just have a couple of quick things on the 10-year budget for the board, and then we can, Chris, if you want to, Mr. Unger, ask them, you know, the public for any input. But just what we always try to do, again, first interim, like Katie said, the problem with the SACS form, the problem with the way they have set up is that all the dollars you receive, you have to budget for them. Like you're going to spend them. Well, we never spend every penny that we receive, right? That budget, we haven't received $7 million in ESSER funds yet. Revenues. So our revenues are going to increase before the end of the year. So while that's not reflected in the first interim SACS form, it is reflected in this 10-year budget. Right. So what you'll see, we anticipate, if you go all the way to the bottom and kind of nuts and bolts, that we should have another surplus this year overall, despite the number of people we've hired, the things that we're encountering, right? We expect a surplus. I would anticipate that we would deficit spend for the next 2 years if we keep all of the, because again, the revenues we will have received them already. Our bottom line will have increased. And then we won't be receiving more federal COVID funds unless something else happens with the state in January. But we will then, again, keep all of these programs that we've established, that we've talked about with the board through the LCAP for the next 2 years. So we have kind of a 3-year plan, right, with the LCAP that we would, the MTSS, the AIDS, the academic intervention, the counseling support, all of the things that we're doing as a school district to get kids caught up from COVID. Well, after this year, 2 more years, we would have to reassess as a district, reassess as a board. Where are we at? What are the things we're going to prioritize? Look at our budget at that point and kind of see where we go and where we head. The key things, though, when you begin to look at something like at the very top line, property tax. So we have estimated 3%. So a 1% drop is $1.1 million, right? So that is a significant amount of money to project and then not have. That said, last year was a 4.1%. So we were $1 million over, right? So again, it's just a projection. It's what we try to plan on as we move forward. You know, we feel good about it. Again, the county is telling us that a lot of these homes that have been built, a lot of secure properties have not even hit the tax rolls yet. So they anticipate this continue, this positive, which again, for us is a great thing, because even if the unitary tax drops, we'll at least, you know, we're not going to see major deficits or major reductions in property tax revenues. But we still have to be cognizant of the fact that it may not be 3%. And, you know, we don't know that until November each year when we have to, again, approve a budget the May before that. So it's kind of a tricky situation as you go through it, but we do the best we can, and we've done a good job. I would say, you know, overall, the budget finances, the finances of the school district, we are in very good shape as we move forward. So this does have the $7 million in it in terms of the CARES Act funding, right? So it doesn't show a $5 million deficit like you see in the FACS form or SACS form. Now, as we go through, we, of course, will – As information becomes a reality, we change this. So when anyone looks at the 2021 year, those are actual numbers, actual funds that we received and expended, right? The key thing that I would, again, and I pointed out every year, is really this benefits calculation. I am super hopeful that the governor will see fit to use a lot of this one-time money, extra funding. It sounds like the state of California is pretty flush when it comes to education funding for next year, that they are going to spend down this retirement. We used to pay, and that Katie showed you the presentation, 8% for a certificate employee. 8% for retirement. That is now up to 16%, headed up to the 20s, 24%. So on top of the salary, just imagine 24%, right? So we have been able to give our employees raises over the past 9 years as a school district on top of this increased benefit package that we've been paying for. And it's difficult for employees because it doesn't make their retirement better. It makes the retirement available for them when they retire, but it's not, you know, this added amount is just paying for the retirement that they currently have in place, right? It doesn't help them buy groceries or pay their rent. So, but yet it is an investment by the district into our employees, right? To ensure that their retirement is there when they leave. For classified employees, it's substantial. It's up to next year, 26% potentially. And we pay Social Security on top of that, almost another 7%. So 33% on top of the salary, right? So those are things that we have to, again, talk with our unions about. They have to understand, the impact of that on the budget, and it has. And so the positive thing, again, is that it ensures that those retirements are there. But you can see by looking at the 10-year budget anyways, you know, really the monetary effect that has. Right, long term, year over year. So I'm really hopeful, and we have been the recipient over the past 3 years where the governor did spend that down and did keep it from getting to that 26% and kept it at 16% for this year. And that makes a remarkable difference when 85% of your expenditures are people or personnel. Right, that is a lot of money when they're able to pay those down, which again allows us to keep MTSS and multi-tiered systems of support and extra counseling support, all those extra things we want to do. And class sizes are really low this year, right? So all of those things that we want to, that are priorities for the district, will be really helpful. And so I really look forward to hopefully some positive news in January when the governor comes out with his education spending bills. Health benefits, of course, is a double-edged sword for employees because we have a 50-50 system. We pay the first $5,000, then 50-50 after that. So even though the district is paying more, the employee is also paying more, right? So it's actually, you know, becomes difficult. And so we know benefits are something that I'm sure we'll be discussing in collective bargaining with our groups and continue to understand and look for plans, look for ways to assist our employees with that. But again, end of the day, if the board looks down at the very bottom, right, ending balance, which is what we're talking about. So we anticipate, again, our ending balance growing. And I would anticipate, not that it's going to be $4 million. Again, we'll see where we're at the end of the year long term. But I would anticipate the next 2 years we will be deficit spending. We're going to spend down some of that surplus we've gathered because of COVID funding, other things over the past 4 years. And I think that's okay, because what that's going to do is that's going to keep those services in place, those supports for kids that the board has prioritized. That said, I'm always looking at personnel, always looking at ways that we can use attrition through this system over the next couple of years, right? So I'll be working on that, meeting with staff and principals and sites and teachers to talk about that, because we never want to have layoffs. I will do everything possible to never have a layoff in the school district. I can't promise that, but I will try to do it through attrition, through people leaving retirements or those types of things whenever possible. But again, I think we're in good shape. Because of the COVID dollars, the one time, we have a lot of support. As Katie said, we hired over 111 people to support kids since May. So, I think it's working. Hopefully you're going to see in our, we've already had some presentations from Laura Storm the effect that we're seeing student achievement have, right, with some of the MTSS. And that was just after a short period that they were on board. So I really look forward to Laura's next presentation, right, to see what type of impact we're having academically with kids, as well as from a mental health standpoint, we've heard issues. So that's kind of a big picture look as well. And so it's good with the projection. We're going to keep it at 3% right now in terms of long term. I think I don't want to be, you know, it's that conservative balance. I don't want to be too conservative. I don't want to be too, liberal in terms of where we think the projection is going to be. And I think it's a positive place for us to look forward on.
So are there any board member questions before I go to the public? Okay. Seeing none, I'll go to the public on this item. Mandy, is there anyone? Seeing no one, I'll close this item. So this is resolution 12.01 to accept the first interim report, which is as of 10/31/21. Would someone like to make a motion?
Yeah, I'd like to make a motion. I'd really like to thank Katie and staff. This is just an amazing amount of work. There's money coming and going and the county making mistakes, and we're still in great shape. So thank you very much. And I'd like to make that motion, Chris.
Somebody like to second it by Mrs. Frame. Is there any further discussion? Eve, did you have further discussion? Okay. Well, since you have your mic on, I'll start with you, Eve.
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Evelyn?
Yes.
Catherine?
Yes.
Marilyn?
Yes.
Ellen? And I'm a yes. Motion carries 7-0. 12.02, resolution 12-21-21, intent to dedicate right-of-way and public utility easement and calling public hearing in connection therewith.
Yeah, so with the Avila project, of course, the houses are moving forward. They've built the next four units, and so getting ready to sell those. And part of what they ran into now with PG&E, they are requiring public agencies and public agency land that we have to adopt a resolution for a public right-of-way as well as utility easement. So anytime we have any type of PG&E, situation on any of our properties, like we did it recently at Teach Elementary School, they're requiring this of public agency. So they literally won't turn the electricity on the new units until we go through this two-step process. So the first one tonight is just the intent to move forward, and then I will be bringing this back to the board in January for the actual easement right-of-way, hopefully approval.
Okay, is there anyone from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, Mrs. Roger?
I'll move resolution 12-21-21.
We have a motion by Mrs. Roger. Second by Dr. Eisenrath Rogers. Is there further discussion? Mrs. Roger?
Yes.
Dr. Eisenrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer? Mrs. Frame? Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Motion carries 7-0. 13.01, appointment of personnel commissioner. Mr. Block, you're back.
Continuation from earlier here. At the regular school board meeting on November 2nd, 2021, the board announced their intention to appoint Irene Iwan to the personnel commission. A public hearing was held earlier this evening to allow public input. Following this public hearing, the board may now take action to appoint a new personnel commissioner.
Okay, is there anyone from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Mrs. Frame? Motion by Mrs. Frame. Second by Mrs. Roger. Any further discussion? Mrs. Frame?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger? Mrs. Sheffer? Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Dr. Eisenrath Rogers?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Motion carries 7-0. 13.02. And congratulations, Mrs. Iwan. We're excited for you. Sorry, I'm just trying to get through this.
Yeah, thank you.
Educator Effectiveness Fund Plan, second reading. This is a second reading, Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so the Educator Effectiveness Fund is a a grant came through from the state of California for professional development. So within sticking to the 10 areas where the district can spend the money, we did outline a budget for this and presented it to the board back in November. I've tried to stay, you know, kind of in a not be too descriptive, too narrow in the focus of these funds, right? Kept it pretty broad. Diane Frost is working with her team to kind of put together a five-year plan for professional development that she'll be sharing with the board later. Though we have to, by law, to receive these funds, pass this Educator Effectiveness Fund grant plan tonight. I will tell the board that at any time in the future, there's nothing stopping us from changing the plan. So I am asking the board to hopefully approve the Educator Effectiveness Fund plan this evening. Thank you.
Is there anyone from the public to address the board on this item? Seeing no one, I'll bring it back to the board. Mrs. Frame?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. Pino. I just had a question.
Evelyn, yeah, could you get it? Thank you.
Okay, sorry about that. I understand that, you know, we're just kind of broad descriptors and we just need approval. Are we, how would we, what would you be looking for if we did need to change? And what kind of, you know, feedback, you know, future, you know, looking ahead? I'm not saying that, you know, we would or need, but, you know, what does that process entail?
From a big picture standpoint, I think the LCAT process that we go through in terms of what are the, you know, again, the board went through a mission, vision, priorities, you know, that, that's probably the start, right? Mm-hmm. That is the guideline that we try to then follow and, you know, establish how, you know, the types of professional development opportunities we're going to have for our staff. Mm-hmm. So that we have that conversation with the board annually. Uh-huh. So Diane and I will be going out to sites, kicking that off in January again. We have our LCAP committee that Rick Mayfield runs. We have all of our district equity committee, all the different, you know, things that the board's involved in. So taking all that input from staff, as well as our principals and teachers through that process, I think helps guide us in terms of where we want to go. Again, Diane can talk about kind of her goals and her focus on, you know, we have all these things going on. And so I think we need kind of a plan to put together, which she's currently working on. So I would see her sharing that with the board, getting the board's feedback, input on that plan as we move forward, right? And then really my job, I see it as, okay, you know, again, I told Diane, don't think funds right now. You think what do teachers need? What do kids need? What do we need to put in place? And then I'll work with the board on, okay, how do we fund it? Is it, you know, some LCAP, some COVID, some of the educator effectiveness funds, how we plan that out, right? And and so then my job is to make sure that I'm relaying that budget information to the board as, you know, as we move forward.
So, and just that clarifies a lot for me. The other thing is when we're going out to, you know, doing the presentations and we're presenting stuff and getting surveys, what kind of feedback do we get from staff on or, you know, from the PD? What, I mean, are they giving us specific information on the types of PD they want, types of PD that they don't find useful or, you know, what, and maybe this isn't the time. I mean, it can certainly be done at another time.
I think Diane, I mean, we actually, our last secondary PE or PD day, I mean, Diane can probably give some great feedback on, because we do ask staff what they thought.
Yeah, we'll have an online survey, especially after our larger professional development opportunities. We did Teacher Clarity this summer. ISLA did provide a survey so that the teachers could give us meaningful and honest feedback. And we use that in our planning. Absolutely. And then with Ryan and I going around to schools starting in January, that will be something we'll be talking about too. You know, through the LCAP survey, they can give us feedback on the professional development that they've participated in and what they would love to have in the future.
Did I go to the public on this yet? Let's just go to the public in case I didn't. Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Okay. So are there other questions? If not, I'd entertain a motion. Well, I'll go ahead and move item 13.02, Educator Effectiveness Fund. Would someone like to second that? Second by Mrs. Sheffer. Is there any further discussion? Mrs. Sheffer? Mrs. Roger? Mrs. Frame?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Motion carries 7-0. 13.03, proposed revision to board policy 0420, school plans, site council's first reading. Mrs. Frost.
Yes, thank you. Again, this is 0420. It's school plans and site councils. It's an annual review, so our subcommittee looks at it every year. There are a couple of changes this year. Meetings shall be open to the public and specifies training for all new members of a school site council. I recommend that it come back for a second reading.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public to address the board on this item? Okay. Is there anybody who would not like to see this move forward for a second read?
Yeah, Ms. Frost, I have just a quick question. Who provides that training?
So the site can provide the training, the principal meeting with the new members prior to the actual first meeting. Can happen over the summer. It can happen in the fall. It's also something that ISLA could pick up. Meaning there will be a lot of new school site council members in the fall and just having a training opportunity where everybody can be trained at the same time.
Yeah, I was wondering if there was some kind of a formalization process where they kind of all get the same message and even like a video or, you know, something that could say,
to the best of my understanding and from my own experience, we don't have it formalized yet.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Good question.
So we'll bring this back for a second reading. Is everybody good with that? Okay. 13.04, proposed revision to board policy 3550, food service child nutrition program, first reading. Mrs. Frost?
Yes. Again, this is an annual review, so our subcommittee looks at it annually. There's just one small change. It adds classroom nutrition programs, and we haven't had classroom in the board policy before. Again, I'd say come back for a second reading.
Okay, any questions? Is there anybody from the public? Is everybody okay if we bring it back for a second reading? Okay. Let's move on to the consent agenda. Of course, let me know if you want something pulled. 14.01, approve increases to minimum wage and substitute salary schedule.
Pull.
Hold on. 14.02, approval of new positions, program specialist and TOSA special educator. 14.03, approval of instructional calendars for 2022-23 and 23-24. 14.04, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 14.05, acceptance of donations. 14.06, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 14.07, disposal of surplus. 14.08, approval of purchase orders and CalCard purchases. 14.... Wait.
Is that the right number?
14.0...
All right.
Did I miss one? Did I miss surplus?
If I can just...
Which one? Hold on, Mark. Which one are you...
I'm working on it.
I'd like to pull 1404, please. I'm sorry, I missed it.
Okay, hold on just a second. 1404, hold on here. Okay.
Chris, can you hold on one second?
Yeah, sure.
I appreciate your patience. Okay, sorry. If you continue, I think I'll get there.
Okay, so I'm going to go back to 14.04, which has been pulled. 14.05, acceptance of donations. 14.06, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 14.07, approval of disposal of surplus. 14.08, approval of purchase orders and CalCard purchases. 14.09, approval of minutes, November 16th, 2021. 14.10, authorized continued use of remote teleconferencing provisions pursuant to AB 361 and Government Code 54953.
Please pull, Chris.
14.10. Hold on, Mark. 14.11, approval of warrants and payroll. 14.12, proposed revision to board policy 0410, non-discrimination in district programs and activities. And 14.13, proposed revisions to board policy 5141, healthcare and emergencies. Okay, so let's see. Before I'm going to go to public comment, so I'm going to ask for 14.02, 14.03, 14.05, 14.06, 14.07, 14.0.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
We don't typically ask for public comment on action consent items.
I think I have to. I've been asking for it. Um, 14.08, approval of purchase orders and CalCard purchases. 14.09, approval of minutes. 14.11, approval of warrants and payroll. 14.12, proposed revisions to board policy. And 14.13, proposed revision to board policy 5141. Would someone like to make a motion for those? And okay. Hold on. Would someone like to make a, would someone like to second that? All right. Mrs. Dawson, is there anybody from the public that wants to address us on that? Okay. So we have a motion and a second. Mrs. Dawson, did you get all those? Okay. Mrs. Sheffer? Dr. Eisendrath Rogers? Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Mrs. Frame?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger? And I'm a yes. Okay. Eve, you or let's see. Somebody asked for 0.01 to be pulled.
That was me.
I'm sorry, Mrs. Frame. I got it wrong.
Okay. That's okay. No problem. Yeah, I wanted to thank Mr. Block. He answered my questions regarding some of this. But I do have a question, and I don't know if it can be answered. How does our pay scale compare with surrounding districts? And, you know, are we kind of top? Are we middle? Where do we fall within that, you know, as we look for, you know, covering our shortages? And he explained to me that, you know, the plan that's in place to cover, you know, teacher classrooms. And he said there was some deficit in some of the areas, you know, particularly paras and things like that, which everyone's aware of. And it's universal across the state. But where does our pay scale fall surrounding districts, I guess?
And I would say we're on the higher end. Okay. In terms of, it's a little bit of a game in that we got out in front early and raised our rates, and then other districts looked at our rates and raised theirs, and then we came back to the board and raised ours again. So I think that's why at this point, and even talk, it actually was a topic of conversation at our CBO meeting last Friday about mm-hmm. subs. I think we're at a point now where it's not about the pay. The reason why we are having a hard time finding subs is not because we're not paying enough. It's just there's no people. Okay. Aspect of it. So it, you know, it's just one of those things, and all the districts are facing the same thing.
Okay.
But in terms of actual sub pay itself, we're on the higher end.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Mrs. Frame, would you like to make a motion on 14.01?
Yeah, unless there's any further discussion, I'll make a motion to approve 14.01, approve increases to minimum wage and substitute salary schedule.
Would someone like to second that? Second by Dr. Eisendrath Rogers. Mrs. Dawson, is there anybody from the public? Okay. Mrs. Frame? Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer? Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mrs. Roger? Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Motion carries 7-0, 14.04. Mrs. Roger.
Right. I pulled this item only to note that the pending retirement of Marilyn Spratt, longtime bus driver in our district and also a very valuable contributing member to the SEIU bargaining team. And with that noted, I will move approval of 14.04.
Someone would like to second that? Second by Dr. Eisenreth Rogers. Is there anybody from the public? Okay. Mrs. Roger.
Yes.
To Dr. Eisenreth Rogers. Ms. Dobler-Drew.
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer. Mrs. Frame.
Yes.
Mr. Buckman.
Yes.
And I'm a yes. Motion carries 7-0. 14.10. That was you, Mark.
I ask this to be pulled. While I recognize the importance of continuing this opportunity due to health concerns, I'm also very excited about this because it allows parents and others, some with kids, some with needs at home, and others, so that we can continue to do the Zoom meetings. And we have a really opportunity here for the public to continue to attend our meetings. So with that, I'd like to move approval of 14.08.
14.10.
I'm sorry. That's why I had to go look it up. 14.10.
Somebody like to second that? I'll second that. Is there any member of, is there anybody from the public? No. Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Ms. Dobler-Drew?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer? Mrs. Roger? Dr. Eisenreth Rogers?
Yes.
Mrs. Frame? And I'm a yes. Motion carries 7-0. Is there anybody who would like to talk about advanced agenda? Okay. How about reports by board members? Ms. Dobler-Drew.
I had a great time at the last football game at Morrill Bay. Home team, home game. It was such high energy. It was great to be there, and I thank Mr. Sheldy for inviting me and all of us. And so, you know, I just know that next year they'll probably win the whole thing. They'll go all the way. So just looking forward to that, but did great this year. I mean, who could have imagined that they would get that far? I mean, because it's a tremendous accomplishment, and the kids were great, such high energy. Loved the evening.
Thank you. Other board member reports?
Yes, please.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. So I promise I won't do this every time, but every once in a while I go back and I look at the philosophical underpinnings of our board and the district strategic plan. And there are four unanimously agreed upon areas: achievement, deep learning and support, intentional culture of care, shared leadership, stakeholder engagement, effective stewardship of resources. And so for many years, we've had a heading in culture of care, intentional culture of care. I just thought, you'll bear with me, I'd just like to read this again. San Luis Coastal will ensure that all students are empowered to reach, let me go back. San Luis Coastal will ensure that all students are empowered to reach their full potential by valuing student voice, addressing inequities, and closing opportunity gaps. So just this applies to all the students. San Luis Coastal is committed to creating and nurturing inclusive learning environments where all students, staff, and families feel deeply connected to their school community. Again, all students. San Luis Coastal will focus on social-emotional needs of our students through a targeted system of counseling. Again, all students. I am so proud of this district. We focus on all the students, all their futures, and always. So thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? I'd just like to say to acknowledge our food services and their achieving a Golden Bell Award from CSBA. It's a program that recognizes exemplary programs in California, and our food services program was a Golden Bell winner this year. So congratulations to Mrs. Primer and all the people in food services who make this possible. So thanks to all of you. And on that note, I think We're adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone.
Recording stopped.